This is Cradle My Heart Radio with your host, Kim Cotola. Cradle My Heart Radio, preventing abortion and helping those it hurts.
This is where the healing begins. Oh, this is where the healing starts. This is where the healing starts. When we come to where you're broken within, the light meets the dark. The light meets the dark.
And now, Kim Cotola and Cradle My Heart Radio.
Welcome to Cradle My Heart Radio. It is a pleasure to have you with us on this episode. And, you know, often we bring you people from the pro-life movement who are working either in the pregnancy help movement or who are educating on the life issue. We've talked with experts on bioethics. We've shared lots and lots of stories of everyday people who have walked in the newness of life after the devastation of abortion. But this guest that we're going to bring you today, I feel is really unique because more than many people that I've met, she is using her talents and her experience in the arts as a mechanism and as a method for healing the problems that come into our lives after abortion. We're really pleased today to welcome back to Cradle My Heart Radio, Sandy Arena, who is the writer, director, and producer of the film Arise, Sweet Sarah, which is something that has grown out of her work with the Life Ballet. Sandy, thank you for being back with us today on Cradle My Heart Radio.
Thank you so much, Kim, and Cradle My Heart listeners for having me here today. I'm so honored to be speaking with you again about a topic that's so near and dear to my heart and that I'm so passionate about, and about our latest project, Arise, Sweet Sarah. So thank you so much.
Sandy, when we last spoke, you were telling us about the Life Ballet, which was performed live in states all across the U.S., and it's also available to view on your website and on YouTube, and of course we'll have those linked at cradlemyheart.org. But I want to start even before that, to go back to your story of why this, what motivated you to get into this work, and what brought about your change of heart after your own experiences. So let's start there and tell me about, you know, what happened to you as a woman who lost motherhood through choice.
Well, boy, that's such a long time ago. Backing up to those days when I was a young woman where I first started dealing with the choices that I had made and losing motherhood through abortion and the devastation of that as a young woman. And there was a time where I was in a very, very dark place of shame, and so much so that if I were in certain settings and someone even mentioned the word abortion, I would go running to the bathroom, especially in church. If my perception at that time, which I know is not an accurate perception, was that I was the only one in, sitting in the pews who had had an abortion. If I was in a situation like that, I was even more inclined to hide in shame. But God started gently peeling me, you know, out of that bathroom, and, you know, ending up on the stage of the Life Ballet through a series of events, the most significant being when in our city where I live, there was a woman who has the same name as me, who was accused of murder, and her name was in the news, very prominently so, and so much so that there were many people who thought that it was me. My first reaction to that was that I was, you know, the good quote-unquote Sandy Arena who did not do that, you know, was being accused of murder, but was the Sandy Arena who owned a Christian ballet studio at the time. That's what I was doing. And I really set myself apart from her in righteousness. And then God really convicted me that I too had sinned and fallen short of his glory. And even though society did not call the choice I've made for abortion murder, I too had taken the life of another. And I was very, very convicted being in that extremely unique position. And I wrote an opinion piece about it that our daily newspaper printed and was read by thousands. And my secret then was out. And the biggest surprise that came from that was all my friends in church then came to tell me that they too had had abortions, many of them. And I was just so taken by that, Kim, that I couldn't believe that, you know, I had been hiding in the bathroom, and sitting right down the pew from me were others who were in the same place of darkness. And therein was the beginning of the Life Ballet. Because I was running a Christian dance studio at the time, I felt like knew how to make a show and use that platform of dance as a way to start communicating this message that, one, we have to get out of the trenches and out of the bathrooms and the places of hiding and shame, A, and B, also that we need to bring healing to ourselves and to all of these millions of people who are suffering from this choice. And that was really how the Life Ballet started, and it just grew from there. I created a show and told my story using, again, this medium that was I was very familiar with using dance as a communication form, and music and lyrics and things like that.
Sandy, that just is so remarkable how God draws us into speaking the truth, something that in our flesh of ourselves, we say, I could never tell anybody about that, and certainly not publicly by writing in the newspaper this, something that's going to be read by everyone, people at my church included. And I want to give you the chance to say just a little bit more about that for the person listening who's right back there where you were, where I was before the Lord led us into speaking that truth. I think that it's important that we understand that this was a divinely ordained circumstance in your life, and I'm guessing you wouldn't tell anybody, yep, if you had an abortion, you should just write a letter to the editor. Sometimes women can think that, you know, that's what's required of them when they hear a dramatic story like yours. But share a little bit more about that process and how you made that decision in your heart and what gave you that strength and the courage to do that when you thought you never could have done so.
The strength and the courage that came from just knowing how dark and stifling that place is, where you feel, I can't let my friends know this. I can't let my pastor know this. I can't let my next door neighbor know this. I can't let, you know, the teachers at my children's school know this. Like, this is how shame works, and it just is torment. We have a line in the show, it says the silence of shame is torment. It was tormenting to me to have this very enormous place in my heart that had just been locked up and caged and was skewing the way that I saw it, so much so that I would run and hide. And what I would say to anybody who feels that way, and I felt that way, and honestly, Kim, there are still moments where, you know, even with the release of our film, you know, I had to stop and think, and, you know, that certain communities or certain people that I'm connected to, you know, this is out. This is people are going to see this, and this needs to get out. But I still need to find that strength and that courage to stand before any community or any person that's important to me and say, no, that, you know, we need to let ourselves free first so that we can heal and we can be a whole person. And I would just encourage anyone who has those feelings and can identify with what I'm saying to find that strength and that courage to speak even to one person and to share, you know, that there is forgiveness and there is healing. And Jesus is there, and he's waiting for us to go and run and touch his garment. And wow, what an amazing feeling it was. When my story came out, I was just like, I could breathe. I could exhale. And I could feel the grace and the mercy that comes from Christ. And there's so much that God wants us to do with our stories so that we can testify. I truly believe that the testimony of those who've made this choice, as we become stronger in our voice, collectively becomes louder, that we are building armies to end abortion. And that's not first and foremost. Of course, I want abortion to end, but my heart and my compassion is to help people who were in that place where I was. First and foremost, of course I want abortion to end, because I don't want anybody to feel this way and to go through this. And it is not the right choice to make, and it's not okay to do this. But I really do want what my work and feel my place is to reach out to those who are hurting like I did. And I'm so honored to be here.
And
so.
I can Oh, my goodness, Sandy. And, you know, as I listen to you speak, and I know that you experienced this, and so did I, and so I will just say this is an encouragement before we move on and talk about Arise, Sweet Sarah, and the artful way that you are helping hearts heal, is that, you know, by doing so, whether or not somebody has had an abortion, by you saying, yep, this is who I actually am. I don't need to pretend to be somebody else before you. I can tell you that I sinned, that I made a grave and fatal mistake, and that God's mercy has covered it. And for his glory, he has made me to be who I never was. You know, a story like that is so encouraging to those who hear it and gives them the freedom to speak the truth and to also, I think, accept what they have been trying to deny about themselves, that, yep, I'm capable of something really dark as well, you know, if I get desperate enough. And by doing so, I think it brings light into so many lives. And so I'm really glad that you obeyed and that you sacrificed some of your privacy to share that story, because I know that people were touched in the short term. And I know that people are being touched even as they're listening to you share the story again here.
Yes, and thank you, Kim. And I just again will just reiterate how freeing that was to me. And it breaks my heart when I hear stories. This happened to me. I haven't spoken about it since I was 18 years old, and I'm speaking to a woman, you know, who is in their 40s. And wow, just how painful is that to hold on to something that is so life changing and that is. Evoke so many emotions, and to not have the resolve or the freedom to, you know, process grief and all of the things that abortion does to change you as a person, as a mother, through different stages of life, and not to be able to grieve that properly and to put it into perspective with community or fellowship or being able to share with the people who are important to us. So it's just devastating for me when I hear that, because I do. You know, like we said, I remember. I don't soon forget what that feels like.
Sandy Arena is our guest. She's the writer, director, and producer of the film Arise, Sweet Sarah, which has just opened on September 12th. I believe this program will be airing a little bit later in the month, but there are ways that you can see it and access it, and we'll be sure to talk about that as our conversation proceeds. But this work also has come as a result of the Life Ballet, which Sandy founded and created as a result of suffering lost motherhood in the wake of choice. You know, there's something, even though we're talking about sharing the story, writing letters, speaking, giving our testimony in church or wherever God provides those opportunities for us, there's something about the arts, and there's something about an indirect expression, or perhaps even a more direct expression than words could ever capture. So give us the overview of the storyline of Arise, Sweet Sarah, which again comes from the Life Ballet.
Yes. Well, the Arise, Sweet Sarah was birthed out of the Life Ballet, like you said. We had been traveling with the film, with the live production. We started in 2008 and went all over the country to share a live stage show. And from that, we were presented the opportunity to film the show with a record label that we had met on the streets of Nashville in Tennessee while doing street ministry. We were connected with a group of musicians who also had started this label, and they were playing their musicians on the street, and we were dancing alongside them again, because it is such a powerful way to minister. We were ministering, you know, to the public then, not about this topic of lost motherhood, but, you know, sharing the love of Jesus with them. And from that, outgrew this opportunity and connection for us to take what we had been doing on the stage and to actually turn it into a film. And I will say, as far as working with this subject matter and taking it in an artistic format from the stage onto film was amazing to me as an artist, because there was so much that we were limited with in a live performance. And my role, my job, what I felt God really has called me to do in wake of all of this, that my place in this topic is to take what is my ugliest story in my life, and turn it into something beautiful using beautiful artistic means to share a very, very difficult story. And on the stage, we could do that with lyrics and costumes, but every time we would show up someplace, we were dealing with a different sound situation or lighting and, you know, how are we going to get the costumes there and who's available to travel with us, and not to mention the expense of doing a live show. So with film, I'm just so incredibly grateful and excited that this is now fully recorded and that I had, you know, more bells and whistles, if you will, to share the story and do various aspects that we weren't able to do in a live show. For example, our heaven scene, because we show in the show, and this is important to me, and I feel it's important for other people who are healing after the choice and lost motherhood, is to imagine your children in a better place and with that hope that you will be reunited with them. So being able to film a heaven scene where we see our babies go to heaven was so much more satisfying artistically in a film format than it was in a live stage, where we filmed on the beach and we had so many kids that, you know, I wanted to get as many children as I could into that scene and have them be dressed in beautiful costumes, doing fun things like flying kites and digging in the sand and running around playing tag with Jesus. the musings in my mind of what I think, I don't know what heaven's going to be, but this is just my thought process. So from that perspective, what an honor and privilege to be able to use film as that format.
Well, and you're also, and I think this is very inspired, you're also honoring children in the film itself, and on your website connected to Arise Sweet Sarah. Talk about the opportunity that those who are grieving lost children to abortion have to be part of this individually.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. This was just one of my favorite parts of the film, one of my favorite parts of this whole experience, was that we opened up the opportunity for the public to dedicate their unborn children to the film, because we say in the live show and now also the film that we dedicate our work to the children who never had the chance to dance. And so we have a place on our website now where you can submit the name of your child, and we will create a space on the memorial page for your child. And we also, the film is completed, so our unborn baby dedications are already complete in the film format. But we had almost 500 names that were submitted for the film. And so watching that, you know, at the premiere on Saturday, to see it on the large screen, and there was a beautiful song playing, and we saw our character, Sarah, dancing on the beach with her unborn babies, and just these names scrolling down, and I just get choked up thinking about it, because every name that was submitted to us came with a story and a broken place, and, you know, to see the opportunity for someone to share, maybe it was their first time to share and say, you know, this is what happened to me, and I felt so honored and privileged to be able to hear these stories and to take those names and give them a place of honor. You know, we stood up, the audience, standing ovation and clapping to honor these children and to honor those who were left in the aftermath, who were hurting. It was so beautiful and definitely one of my favorite parts of the film. So I encourage people to go and find that place on our website and submit their child's name as a first place of healing, even, if you will. Names also came from grandparents, and we received a letter from a man whose sister had, I mean, it's just so tragic. He actually said he was at pro-choice at one time, and his sister had an abortion, and the family didn't know. And so utterly tragically, she made the choice to take her own life, and then she shared in her letter that she had done so because of this choice. And, you know, when I would receive something, an email like that, you know, I would just cry buckets of tears. And just say, I can't believe the pain that's out there. And if we could have a part of being an avenue to just voice what happened and share, that it's a great honor and a great privilege to me.
Mm. Sandy, did you go through a post-abortion healing Bible study or a retreat or some kind of a program that had structure?
I went through personal counseling in my early stages with people I was close to within my family system who were in a counseling position, and also with one-on-one counseling, you know, in that type of setting with a therapist. As time went on, because I can definitely say that this came in waves and layers, when we started working on the Life Ballet, I only wrote, it was like every story, every scene, every moment came through some divine place, and I couldn't write it and put it in place until I experienced it. So really my structure came from creating this show. Yeah, I didn't have the end of the show for a couple years. It, you know, definitely evolved. Since then, I've attended so many post-abortion healing symposiums and events, and have been connected to many different Bible studies. And one that I have done myself personally is called Up from the Ashes, and it's written by Jennifer Disney, and she is located in the California area. But there are so many of them. And we have a directory on our website, because I felt very, very pressed to make sure that those who see our show, because you do walk through a healing journey, but it's only just the beginning when you watch the whole show, that to go from there is to reconnect with more people and more organizations and Bible studies. So there is a link on our website to be able to find a study that fits you or a retreat. Mm-hmm.
We'll have that linked at cradlemyheart.org, and I appreciate that, too, because not everybody is going to feel comfortable going to a Bible study or a retreat. Not everybody has the same journey marked out for them by the Lord for their healing, and there are some for whom private counseling is a great fit, and so I really appreciate that, Sandy, and I ask the question because you, to me, are the model of what it looks like to be healed. You know, you mentioned when I asked about your story, I'm going to have to go back and think about that. And you mentioned still crying buckets of tears when you hear a tragic or a sad or a devastating abortion story. And yet you are healed and you have transformed the experience into something beautiful and good for God's glory. And I think that I really want people to see that in you, that, you know, we may have an expectation that when we're healed, we're going to put it behind us and move on. But I've not yet met the woman who wants to do that after abortion, because we want to remember the experience, as sad as it is, because, you know, there's also beauty in it. There's also love. There's God's goodness overflowing out of it. And so I just appreciate that you really do model what healing looks like.
Yes. And I mentioned to you the one Bible study that I had done, Up from the Ashes, and there's a line in that, and she says, a healed person or a healed woman is a powerful person. And I just love that, because it gives us the freedom to and the strength to share, and to, and as compassion, as fellow women and mothers, to, you know, just want to stop others from making this choice and to share our stories. And what a powerful thing to be able to do that, to extend our love and the love that we received and the mercy from God to others. So, yes.
Now, Sandy, we just have about a minute remaining, and so we'll put all these details again on cradlemyheart.org and link to yours. But briefly, can someone license Arise Sweet Sarah for showing at their church or their pregnancy help center? Is there a way to arrange for a public showing if someone would want to do that?
Yes, we have a link on our website, which you can go to learn more about how you would purchase a DVD for personal showing, and then also for the licensing, like you're saying, to show it as a movie event at your church or your pregnancy center or your group. And it's very simple. You know, just click onto the website and it walks you through the process, and then we will provide you with what you need to actually share a film and create an event And I think it's a wonderful opportunity for other organizations to have a reason to gather, to talk about this topic, to bring in your own speakers, to, you know, have your own resources available for the ministry that you're involved in for healing, and, you know, to use it as a starting place for discussion about this. I think it's also a wonderful topic. A lot of the feedback we've gotten is for how it's wonderful for teenagers.
I think it's one of the few things that I think everybody could be comfortable showing in a youth setting. Well, Sandy Arena, thank you so much. Again, you can learn more at cradlemyheart.org, and we'll link to Sandy Arena with Arise, Sweet Sarah, and the Life Ballet. Thanks for being our guest today. Now stay with us here at Faith Radio. We'll continue taking a look at some of the top stories in the news this week on the life issue, and our phones will be open for your phone calls as well. Jot down the number, 1-800-811-3003, here at Cradle My Heart Radio. If you want to get in touch with us via sending us a tweet, I'm on Twitter at Kim Ketola. It's K-E-T-O-L-A, at Kim Ketola. Or if you want to leave a website, if you want to leave a comment on our website, it's cradlemyheart.org. There's a comment field that you can take advantage of there. But we'd love to hear your voice, too, at 800-811-3003. I do want to start the program with an email that I received this week because I think it's very timely. And it comes from a listener in Fargo who tells me that she says she's really grateful for the show. She says, first, I have to tell you how grateful I am for your show, Cradle My Heart. I've not had an abortion, but it is a subject that I can't ignore as I walk with God. And she writes, I appreciate how you encourage women with the hope and healing only given through Jesus after suffering a loss through abortion. She says, with that, I felt like calling in numerous times during the second half of your show when you talk on the things that are in the news and social media, legislation, other things regarding this topic, but I haven't. And she doesn't really say why, but I understand. You know, sometimes late Sunday night, it's tough. And sometimes, you know, I have a prayer partner who assures me, Kim, they just don't want to stop listening to get over to the phone and dial. And so, you know, that's fine. We're prepared to carry it if you don't care to give us a call, but I would love to hear from you. And, you know, part of the things that we want to do with this program is give you a chance to share your story. 800-811-3003. And that's what is at the center of the reason why this listener in North Dakota was sending in her email. She said, you probably caught it on Twitter this week, but on Tuesday I was appalled to see hashtag shout your abortion trending. She says, I can't imagine who would even want to start a hashtag so vile, but I was glad to see some pro-lifers using the opportunity to promote life and adoption, because by the end of the day, shout your adoption, I think, was getting as much traction as shout your abortion. Anyway, she goes on to write, I was tempted to use the hashtag as a pro-life message, but I was afraid I could possibly send the wrong message by actually utilizing a tag intended to glorify abortions. And so she passed along some of the mentions, and she shared one that I had not seen, and it said, I'm not even sure I can read it. It's so vile. In fact, I don't think I will. I may share this post on cradlemyheart.org, but it's just not suitable. It's not suitable for polite conversation. This person is comparing abortion to something else that women use, and she says it should be free and available in every public restroom, and it would be if men needed them too. Hashtag shout your abortion. And it had over 400 retweets and 1,000 likes, and it was much more vulgar than what I just read to you, or how I just translated it. Our listener in North Dakota also shared an article from the UK stating 95% of women have had an abortion are glad that they did. And, you know, that's interesting that that study would be now reported in the UK because, gee whiz, the 95% figure came out in the US here not too long ago, too. How about that? One in three women has an abortion, 95% don't regret it. Why are we so afraid to talk about it? This is from theindependent.co.uk. And The Independent, you should know, is, you know, very progressive and or liberal. And so, of course, they would be on board with this program, with, you know, the 1 in 3 program. Again, as we've talked about this, 1 in 3 has been going on for about the last year or so. Some say a grassroots effort from women who just want to remove the stigma because nothing happened in their life, so they're speaking out. I mean, right there, isn't that protesting too much? If you had an experience that meant nothing to you, why would you choose to speak out? If you had an experience that had zero impact in your life, why would you recall it, much less be tweeting about it or sharing your story in some 1 in 3 forum? And when you read the stories, sometimes they're devastating and they're very difficult to read. But with the Shout Your Abortion, the stories are more just hardened hearts, stories of hardened hearts. And this is the thing that I think this effort to normalize abortion really illustrates, is that there is no 95% reaction. I reject that notion out of hand. You know, a lot of these surveys that have shown that women feel only relief after abortion are taken in the short term. And to me, even 3 years after an abortion is not long enough to know what the true life impact and that experience is going to be on you. And I think that there are categories of women who have abortions because either they had no social support or they were completely unconvinced that there was any human life involved, or they are rabidly feminist. And I use that word. I know that's an inflammatory word, and it may sound very insulting if you consider yourself a feminist. But they are so committed to a feminist worldview that they simply insist that it's a right and that there's no other consideration. And this is where I think some of the hardness comes in. What do you think? Did you hear about Shout Your Abortion, that hashtag, and that trending, that story trending on Twitter this week? What do you think about it? 800-811-3003 is our phone number. 1-800-811-3003. Kim Cotola, this is Cradle My Heart. And, you know, the ground rules are that you don't need to and give us your name. You can call anonymously if you like, because we understand that there are, especially if you're going to be sharing your story, there are some privacy concerns and it's a sensitive subject, but we still would love to hear your thoughts and love to hear your reaction to this news story. As Newsweek magazine covered the hashtag Shout Your Abortion trend, their headline says that it sparks an outpouring of support and outrage on social media. This story was posted early in the week, written by Polly Mossens. And the hashtag, it says, the hashtag Shout Your Abortion has taken Twitter by storm, creating an outpouring of support from women sharing their personal abortion stories with one another, and an equal outpouring of anger as pro-life advocates attempt to change the hashtag to hashtag Shout Your Murder. It was started by writer and activist Lindy West. The hashtag began with a story from one woman who had an abortion at Planned Parenthood, and West posted the story as the battle to defund Planned Parenthood continues to roar among politicians. Well, there is an answer as to why something that had zero impact on you is would be something that you would choose to comment on. 1-800-811-3003. And so the story, it came from someone named Amelia Bono, who posted it on Twitter. And it reads, "Hi, guys. Like a year ago, I had an abortion at the Planned Parenthood on Madison Avenue, and I remember this experience with a nearly inexpressible level of gratitude. I would tell you all about the exceptional level of care that I received from every single woman at the clinic on that day, but I'm going to wait because I wrote something which I'll share down the road in conjunction with a project that Kimberly Morrison and I are working on. I'm telling you this today because the narrative of those working to defund Planned Parenthood relies on the assumption that abortion is still something to be whispered about. Plenty of people still believe that on some level, if you're a good woman, abortion is a choice which should be accompanied by some level of sadness, shame, or regret. But you know what? I have a good heart, and having an abortion made me happy in a totally unqualified way. Why wouldn't I be happy that I was not forced to become a mother? And so Lindy West picked up on that story and retweeted it, and she said the campaign to defund Planned Parenthood, quote, relies on the assumption that abortion is something to be whispered about, so instead, hashtag shout your abortion. 1-800-811-3003. You know, the thing that strikes me about this story is that there is an assumption that if you are a good woman, abortion is not a good choice. It's not a good choice for any woman. But it's not a choice that should be made by a woman who has a good moral compass, I think. And I'm not talking about, you know, because you necessarily did something immoral that led to the pregnancy. And I have to say this, by the way, in the midst of this conversation, that being pregnant is not a sin, nor could it ever be considered immoral. It took me a long time to understand that. That's why I say, and if you already get that, and if you're already there, you say, well, come on, Kim, please stop stating the obvious. But to me, it wasn't obvious for a really long time. You may do something immoral that leads to a pregnancy, but the state of being pregnant is neither moral nor immoral. It is. A child is innocent, regardless of the circumstances of conception. But where the morality comes in for me is that we as women know this in our hearts, that we do have a moral obligation to our children. We do. We can say that we don't. We can say that it's not a child. We can say that the law grants me discretion on this, grants me a right to destroy it at will. But in our heart of hearts, as women, we know we have a moral obligation to our young, even before they're born. We know it. I want more and more and more and more of us women to embrace that and to shout that truth and to shout that reality, that women can do better. And it's extremely rough if you have no support to do the right thing and to exercise good moral behavior toward your child, your unborn child. I know that firsthand. Extremely difficult. But that's why the pregnancy help movement is so key in all of this, because they are here standing in the gap and providing those necessary resources so that no one ever needs to feel alone in it. What do you think? 800-811-3003. Do women have a moral obligation to their young even before birth? Why or why not? 1-800-811-3003. Let's take a break and give you a chance to get to the phone, because I really want to hear your thoughts on that question. Do women have a moral obligation to their children before they are born? 800-811-3003. I'm Kim Cattola. You're listening to Cradle My Heart Radio. Give us a call.
A safe place to connect with others. Finding God's love after abortion. Cradle My Heart Radio with Kim Cattola. Call toll-free at 800-811-3003. Seeking to help others find God's love after abortion. Cradle My Heart Radio with Kim Cattola. Call toll-free at 800-811-3003.
Thanks for being with us. We'd love to hear your thoughts tonight about something that has been on my heart for quite a while. And it's this idea that women have a moral obligation to our children before birth. There are some circumstances where the state will say that women have legal obligations toward their children before they are born. For example, there are some states where if you take certain drugs, or the taking of certain medications is prohibited during pregnancy because it might impact the fetus negatively, not because of you as a mother. There was a case of a woman who was pregnant with twins, and informed the medical team that she didn't want a scar when they told her that an emergency cesarean was necessary to save the life of the children. She said she would not submit to that procedure because she didn't want a scar. And when one of the children failed to live, she was charged with murder. There are times when the state says, yes, you do have an obligation to that unborn child. Your rights are not strictly unconditional. But do we have a moral obligation to our children before they're born? 800-811-3003. Do you think we do or not? Or is it just so obvious and so plain that you can't even believe I'm asking this question. I'm asking for discussion among us of this question. I think if we who understand the value of life and the sanctity and sacredness of every, and the value of every life, I think if we who grasp that and understand it and believe in it and stand on it, I think if we could inspire women to embrace that moral obligation, not as an odious burden, but as a beautiful thing to build something wonderful upon, I think things might change. Right now, you know, I'm not saying no one ever changes, and we've talked about that on this program too, because I'm an example of someone who changed. After I chose abortion, I became pro-choice. I was pretty much interested in justifying and defending my choice, and I did that for a lot of years, over a decade. And even when I began to understand that that was the wrong viewpoint to hold, I would tell people, well, I know it's wrong, but I don't think I can impose my views on others. And, you know, eventually, as the Lord dealt with me to forgive and redeem that experience, I was free and able to say, you know, it's wrong. It is a choice that I made, but it was a deeply sinful wrong. I failed to live up to the moral obligation to the child living within me because I was terrified of my own interests in life. When I didn't get the support that I needed to see that pregnancy through. 800-811-3003. And how will we cast that vision for women? That living up to one's moral obligations and having the courage to do so, how will we cast that vision? Maybe it's something you've not ever thought about. You know, I was so struck when we went on a pro-life mission to Russia. I went in 2012 as part of the pregnancy help movement there. We were asked to come as a team to advise and consult with women who are starting pregnancy centers in Russia. And of course, you know, Russia's not much better than China. Abortion is so common that when a woman is consulting with her doctor after the pregnancy is confirmed, what he or she as the physician will say is, yes, you are pregnant. Are we having a baby or are we having an abortion? Because abortion is so routine. And it's paid for by the state, and they do very early with a microtube in-office procedures. And so many women have had the procedure, and then they have the spiritual crisis that I experienced that I think is inevitable. It's inevitable that there will be a spiritual reckoning of that abortion at some point in your future if you're a woman who participates in it. And you know what they would say to me? Because they have a different ethos. They would say to me when they would start to tell me their story, I was a coward. And I would ask them to tell me more about that and to explain. And that was something that they thought should be easily understood, what it means to fail one's moral duty in life. And at the heart of the matter, that was the spiritual crisis for me as well, my cowardice. That yes, I lacked support. Yes, I was in a terrible circumstance. Yes, I felt I had no choice, but in my heart I knew I was the last line of the defense that God had set up to protect the life of that little one. And when I assented for that life to come to an end, the little one had no hope because of my failure to live up to my moral obligation. 800-811-3003. You know, and when we look at it from that lens, I think that something lovely happens, because we see that if God can redeem and rehabilitate a coward like me, He can do anything. It's a story to me of His amazing power and love and mercy that brings so much glory to His name. That it's the only reason I would dare share it with you. The idea that I would shout that story to tell people how I defended my future and it was a good thing at the expense of something I can never, ever repay. Something I can never, ever avoid a consequence for this side of heaven. The other thing that struck me as I was thinking about Shout Your Abortion is that line from Shakespeare, "The lady doth protest too much, methinks," from Hamlet, of course. And it's now, of course, become the figure of speech in many different ways of phrasings to indicate that, you know, your overly frequent or vehement attempt to convince others of something may ironically help to convince them that the opposite is true, making you look insincere and defensive. That's basically the Wikipedia version of what it means to say you protest too much. The lady doth protest too much. And when you're on social media saying, "Yes, I did, and it was a good thing for me, and I don't ever look back, and it was me, and it was me, and it was me, and it was me, and I shout my abortion, it was me, for me, good for me. I'm a good woman. It was good for me." I think the ladies protest too much. I think that if the whole world were to agree with them, the stigma would remain. Because you can make your choices, but you cannot choose your consequences. None of us can. It's part of the natural law that God has used to order the universe, and it doesn't matter if you believe in God or not. It's called reaping and sowing. And I pray that if you have been impacted by an abortion in your past and you've not yet received the healing that God has in store for you, that you'd begin to seek it soon. That you'd no longer stay silenced or merely whispering about your abortion, but that you would find a place to share it with someone who can affirm God's love for you and to help you fully repent so you can be free of the shame instead of shamelessly shouting it out while protesting way too much. 800-811-3003 is our number. I think that grasping the moral obligation that we have as women is really the hope for the pro-life movement. Encouraging women not to exercise rights, not to behave like men and enter into sexual relationships that will be consequence-free because we rely on birth control for that outcome. You know, I had a conversation with someone recently who said, you know, well, if you pro-lifers would just embrace contraception, this could all be over with. But no, you're more interested in controlling women and, you know, telling them what they can and cannot do in the bedroom. And I had to say, guess what? I was on birth control in a long-term committed relationship, and it failed. And 2/3 of those who choose abortion will have had a birth control failure. We need a new conversation. We need a brand new conversation inspiring women about the dignity of what God has made us to do when we're granted a pregnancy. The dignity of childbearing, of motherhood, and of releasing for adoption if that is the better plan for you than parenting. because of a particular season of your life. I pray that if you've not been able to call and share your thoughts, that you will get in touch, that you'll visit cradlemyheart.org, perhaps leave us a comment, or visit our Facebook page, which you'll find linked at cradlemyheart.org, and let us know your thoughts. I'm sensing that there is a new season at stake, and that God would have us, you and me, to win the hearts and minds of many. Kim Cotola, thank you so much for listening. This is Cradle My Heart Radio. Please remember, Jesus loves you, and so do we.